Carver Bank Field. 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your host Mike Dempsey and Ryan O'Halloran.
Hey, Ryan stepped out on the docks for a minute, Tony. He's got a tugboat coming in, bringing something in behind it. He was dressed like a longshoreman this morning.
No, he was.
He made that same walk from the parking lot that we did. I have a feeling that none of what he was wearing kept him any warmer than it kept us. Wind chill factor in full effect this morning in Duval County. Welcome in, everybody. Happy Thursday, Jaguars Today. On the job with you, Mike Dempsey, Ryan O'Halloran, Fat Tony. O'Halloran.
I'm here.
I know you are. Were you just finishing up at the loading dock, or what was going on there?
Yeah, I was, you know, catching some fish.
I had the woolly hat just like you this morning. It was one of those days where it doesn't seem to matter how many layers you have, because that wind is a piercing cold right through to your very soul.
Yeah, the first place I feel it, or two places, the dome and the feet.
The feet?
Feet.
Really?
So, but yeah, it's, I walked out this morning and, you know, being from the north, but I was like, this is different.
Yeah.
This
is
different.
By the way, has there been any scientific proof on this whole blood thinning out kind of stuff? You hear that.
I would agree with that.
Your blood does thin out.
Yeah, because when I go up north, like even in the summer, it gets like in the 60s at night. It
gets thickened up.
I was like, a little chilly out.
You big baby. All right, today, if you want to get in, 641-1010. Happy anniversary, Dave Caldwell. 2 years on the job as general manager of your Jacksonville Jaguars. We'll talk about his performance to date, and that will be the focus of the fan feedback spotlight as well coming up here shortly. But, Ryan, let's start off today by talking about the offensive coordinator candidates and how serious you think the interest. We'll just start with Mark Trestman. There was a report by Ian Rappaport. And by the way, you've done, as much as I can see, as much out front reporting on who is actually coming in as anybody out there. So kudos on that.
Thanks.
So when I reference Rappaport, it's not to slight you, certainly, but Rappaport, I think the way he put it was a constant dialogue between the Jags, Gus Bradley, Mark Trestman over about a week's period of time. How serious is the interest in your opinion?
Not serious. The constant dialogue is because they are friends. And that's one thing. That's why I threw out Trestman a week ago is, they didn't really know each other before these became head coaches. They had breakfast at a combine. They had lunch at the owners' meetings talking offense, defense. You know, Gus wanted to find out about some concepts. Mark wanted to know more about defense. So, and they talked during the season. So that's how the constant dialogue is. I don't think that's, I'll say with pretty fair certainty, that's not the direction that this team is heading.
Will there be a formal interview with Mark Trestman?
I wouldn't even go as far as that. I would say probably not right now.
Is this, when you say that you don't think that's the direction the team's headed, is that because other alternatives are ones they're focused on, or they just don't feel Trestman would be a good fit with the personnel? Why is the interest level not what some fans at least seem to hope it would be?
Well, I think the reason the fans look at it is the same reason that we did, is the reason I did, is, you know, he did some good things a year ago with Matt Forte.
Second best scoring offense in the league.
Yeah.
You know.
So, it all depends. Is one of the knocks on Trestman this year in Chicago, other than, you know, lost control of the locker room, which won't apply here, on, you know, at least one half of the ball, is he maybe got away from the run too much. And I think, you know, just reading between the lines on what Gus is doing so far with the first two candidates, is he really wants to pick up that run game with a guy who's committed to it, who has experience with it, at a running back in the draft, because I think he feels at this point, run game and defense are the best ways to get from 3-13 up to, you know, maybe 6 or 7 or 8 wins next year.
I'm not stumping for Trestman here, but the games I watched Chicago when they tried to run this year, it couldn't go anywhere. You know, I mean, it's one of those situations like here in Jacksonville, they ended up throwing way more than I think they were comfortable with as a ratio pass to run plays. But what are you going to do when you keep running into a brick wall?
Yeah, I mean, the same thing here. I mean, everybody could have said, you know, Jed got pass happy.
Right.
Well, they fell behind and nobody ran it.
Which is funny because, you know, when you think pass happy, you think this guy is we're slinging it all over the lot. It's just, you know, wild and crazy. And everyone's complaint about Jed Fish is that he, he was too conservative, too predictable in his play calling. That's, I'd say everybody. Yeah. A lot of the fan complaints about him. We're talking with Jeff Wagman the other day about this. He said his interpretation of what Gus wants on offense is he wants a guy who knows what we do and maybe simple, instead of, you know, what's the identity under Jed Fish? I don't think you knew what it was. Maybe you knew what he wanted it to be, but week to week, there you couldn't count on this one thing being a staple. Are you going to run more of that zone read with Blake Bortles? Are you going to run wide receiver screens? Are you going to drop back and throw it down the field? Are you going to do this, do that? And that the feeling is he wants a guy that knows what they do, knows what they do well, and just beats teams senseless over the head with execution, tempo, because you've mastered what you do well and you're able to play fast because of it.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that Jed said and Gus said at the beginning of this regime was establish a run to set up the play action to take shots downfield. Well, they didn't do A, so it means they couldn't do B, and they sure as hell couldn't do C, which is throwing it down the field. So, I mean, the formula they're looking for here is, can they control possession more? Can they not have three and outs so often? So can they be better on first down running? Okay, that's the first thing. Does that put them in more second and manageables where they can take shots down the field? Because above all, this team in the passing game needs to create some more big plays, and it can't be bubble screens that Marquise Lee turns into a 20-yard gain, because happens maybe once a game, maybe once a month, where you can do something like that on a bubble. So I think that's sort of the philosophy Gus wants to impart is, what ideas can be implemented to improve the running game, to which can, you know, make sure Blake Bortles doesn't have to be one of your leading rushers on a weekly basis.
Right. Ryan O'Halloran from the Florida Times Union here with us. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. If you want to run it more successfully, do they need to, other than bringing in some competition on the offensive line, do they need to address the running back position in your mind? Dave Caldwell said it's not a very high priority because they have a lot of needs, obviously, and that wouldn't rank high compared to some of the other needs they feel they have.
Well, I think they need to address it. Yes, yes, 1,000 times yes. One thing Dave has said, and he said it on the record last week, was the way they looked at this team building process is they wanted to be on offense. They wanted the last piece of the puzzle added to be the running back, which to me means you don't want to waste a good running back when you're trying to build the rest of the offense.
Sure.
So, okay, to me that means you've done it 2 years. I say second round. Maybe if you trade down, pick up a later first, I think you have to address that running back spot. You know,
when you say trade down, pick up a later first, you're talking about trading down from where
you
are.
A scenario I would say, okay, let's say you, if I'm them, I would go, let's say, 3 picks for sale. If you trade down once to 6 or 7, okay, do you pick up an extra second? You know, sort of do what Minnesota did last year, where you start the night with 1 first and you maybe trade back in.
Because with the extra stuff you've acquired, yes, from dropping that,
you know,
first pick.
Trade down a little bit, maybe pick up an extra second.
And package those second round picks, yeah, to move back up higher in the first round.
Correct.
And get the impact player.
You know, and take that running back at 30 instead of 39, where you can get the extra year of contract.
You would do that.
Yes.
Okay. Do you think that's a likelihood with Dave Caldwell, or within the realm of possibility?
I think the most likely thing, just, you know, our sample size for Dave is 2 drafts. Most likely scenario is they stay at 3, and I think they address running back at, what would it be, 39 with tiebreakers?
Yeah,
38,
something like that.
I think that's, and to me, that's fine.
It is, right. You can get guys in the second round, yeah, and typically that's where they've gone. But what if the Gurley Gordon duo is off the board? You still feel that way? I mean, I don't know. Look, Abdullah in Nebraska, there are some other guys out there.
Tevin Coleman.
That may intrigue them.
Yeah, and what I could be is, I'm trying to think of a fourth running back here, but let's say Gurley and Gordon are gone at 39, and you feel Abdullah with 800 collegiate carries, maybe not value there. I think you can wait. Or, you know, trade down from the second round to see if anybody wants to come up and get a receiver. Because I think that's where it's going to be a lot of moves happening again, because it's another deep receiver class.
Right.
Every team that didn't take one last year is going to need to take one this year.
All right, so we talked about Mark Trestman. We will get to Greg Roman, Kirby Wilson coming up in a few minutes. If you'd like to get on board, if you want to talk about the possibility of one of these guys becoming the Jags offense coordinator. You want to talk about where you want to see this team head in the offseason, you're certainly welcome to do that. We'll talk about that a little bit as well today with Ryan O'Halloran. And today, the Fan Feedback Spotlight brought to you by the Foundation Professionals of Florida, asking you in his two-year tenure on the job, happy anniversary, Dave Caldwell, 2 years on the job here in Jacksonville, what is the single best and single worst move that you think Dave Caldwell's made? And, you know, I always ask myself when we post these questions, is the answer just going to be a string of Blake Bortles? No matter what you ask, right? Is it going to be Blake Bortles? And so far, the first four or five that I received, completely different answers every single time. So it's interesting just to see where people's heads are on that. So think about that today and share your thoughts at MD_1010XL, at Ryan O'Halloran, at 1010XL Fat Tony, at 1010XL Tyler as well. The single best and worst move that Dave Caldwell has made in his 2 years on the job as the general manager of the Jacksonville Jaguars. We'll take your calls. Moving ahead, 641-1010. We'll get into the prospect of Greg Roman, the current 49ers offensive coordinator, technically anyway, and Kirby Wilson, running backs coach, most recently now with the Minnesota Vikings, but a longtime coach on the Pittsburgh Steelers staff as well. What are the likelihoods that one of those two gentlemen end up as the offensive coordinator of your Jacksonville Jaguars? Mike Dempsey, Ryan O'Halloran, Fat Tony here with you. Just getting started. Jaguars today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Well, if you're wondering, Tony, what day the Royal Rumble is, we now know. All right? Anything major happening in the world of wrestling? O'Halloran. I'm telling you, I don't think he gets more excited about anything than he does about professional wrestling. That's you. You and Hacker share an abiding love.
Tony Khan.
Does he? Is he another one?
Yes.
What are the metrics? What are the numbers? Does he crunch them for wrestling as well?
Last time I ran into Tony, we're talking. He's like, is the Royal Rumble is like one of the top pay per views of the year because of the Royal Rumble.
Oh, of course.
And we're talking about this. The best part is during it, a wrestler will come out and they'll get. He's participated in his 13th Royal Rumble. He has eliminated 42 men during his career. So they do the analytics for the Royal Rumble.
Nice. So basically, if you eliminated somebody, that means you put them over the top ring rope.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
I still remember what a good, what do they call that? Just a battle royal, right?
That's basically what it is.
Term, right. Battle royal, but it's exclusive. The Royal Rumble. Tony and I are just finalizing our plans to go out to the Super Bowl and we'll be there the Sunday before, which is Pro Bowl Sunday in Arizona. The game's being played in Arizona this year. No Jags look like, so Derek Marks, I think, had a chance, because we know the attrition of guys that go and then they say, oh, well, I don't get to go to Honolulu this year. I'm banged up. I think he would have stood a relatively decent chance to get, recognized and got an opportunity to go there. But with him being injured in the final game of the season, doesn't look like there's going to be too much call for that. But your laptop will be at the ready,
yes,
with the full WWE package and all that comes with it. That's fantastic. I'm looking forward to it.
Yes, it is fantastic.
A full recap that Monday, if we can get it from you.
Absolutely. I'll take notes.
Is Hacksaw somebody in there?
Hacksaw Jim Duggan?
Is he in there? No?
I don't think so. I've met Hacksaw because
have you?
His hometown is Glens Falls, New York, and where I used to work when I was 24, 25. So he was in there in town one time. So a bunch of us went over to the local establishment.
Well, why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
It's Hacksaw Jim Duggan.
We walked in and go, hello!
is that his signature call? Good to know.
That and a 2x4.
Good to know. All right, let's get to, we talked a little bit about Mark Trestman. You don't think Mark Trestman is a serious candidate for the Jags. What about Greg Roman? Here's a guy that 2 years ago, people made the connection. Dave Caldwell, Greg Roman, college together. They've got a history. Logical candidate. There is something to be said for having a GM and a coach that have that comfort level with each other. Obviously, that was the year San Fran was going to the Super Bowl. Whether he would have gotten the job or not, Jags decided not to wait, impressed with Gus Bradley. They made the move. So, at this point in time, Roman has drawn interest, I believe, from the Buffalo Bills for a head coaching position. So, he's still a relatively hot commodity in coaching circles. Certainly, that offense took a step back this year, wasn't nearly as effective. really, in three of his 4 years in San Francisco, wasn't a high-scoring offense. Actually, it was relatively high-scoring. It wasn't an offense that generated big yardage. They were 11th 3 years in a row in terms of scoring offense, and then fell into the 20s this year. But were typically in the 20s or mid-20s in terms of total yardage.
Yeah, and the thing on Roman that stood out was 4 years in San Francisco, their run offense was 4th, 3rd, 4th, 8th. You know, a lot of that was Kaepernick, but a rush yard is a rush yard.
And an outstanding offensive line.
Yes. So, you know, he was going to get interviewed for this head job had San Francisco lost to the Green Bay Packers in that division round game. They didn't, so the interviews went on, and they decided they couldn't wait because it would have been an extra 3 weeks or something like that. So where you can see this interview process going right now is – it's going to take a little while because Gus hasn't met a lot of these guys. I mean, he's talked to guys in passing, but they're going to have to bring him in, talk to him a little bit. It can't be just like a shotgun marriage because they coach together at another staff,
right,
phone call, contract, et cetera. So, Kirby Wilson, interviewing, here today and tonight, and then it's, Roman in over the weekend. So those are the first two guys, but going to be stretched out a little bit. So as far as Roman goes, I mean, the first thing I searched for when I heard of the name, and you know, you've heard of it, was, did you call the plays? Well, you couldn't really – it didn't look like it, but then he got credit for their run game. So was he like the run game coordinator / press box eyes? So, I think they need to get a guy who has play calling experience.
So you don't – right now you don't have a clear picture in your mind whether Greg Roman had that.
Yeah, we're trying to, because Harbaugh is the offensive guy, and it looked like he worked, he was with Kaepernick. So,
right.
I mean, he has coordinator experience, which obviously helps.
Do you think, I've gotten a couple questions on Twitter, one from Duval Doom, for instance, does his philosophy, do you know enough, mesh with a zone blocking scheme?
I don't know enough of that yet. When Gus said that last week, it didn't surprise me because it does go into what the personnel they acquired.
Right.
But also, do you really want to be boxed in at that point? If you talk to a guy who blows you away with some of his ideas and stuff and says, hey, I'd want to run some gap stuff, I mean, I would say, okay, do it.
Can you do – I guess the question would be, do they feel like they can do that with that personnel? They've got three guys – as of right now, that have played two or fewer seasons, that are projected as starters next year. And I think the fans are still waiting to see it from Jokel, but they feel that they're foundation pieces for this offensive line. So,
that's the first part of the interview. Hey, offensive coordinator candidate, four of these guys are locked in.
Right.
So.
At least three of them are locked in. I mean, at least they've been open to the idea that, maybe they'll bring in some competition. I think Beatles is the likely opening day starter at left guard, but it wouldn't be shocking, I think, if they brought in the guy that beat him out. I think they just have – it's not like they have so much invested in Bowanko, for instance. It's only a sixth-round pick, but the fact you have something invested in the hope that, boy, if we can get a starter with a fourth or a sixth-round rookie contract for the next several years, that just opens up so many more doors. You look at Seattle, everybody uses them as the comparison model for how the Jags are trying to build their football team. Some of their key players were later-round picks, mm-hmm. and that's why they've been able to maintain such a high level of talent on the roster.
I mean, you look at the Jaguars' 2015 cap chart, they're paying nothing to a defensive back. They're paying hardly anything to an offensive lineman outside of Beatles, maybe a little bit of Jokel. So they have flexibility all over the place. It's just to find competition on the offensive line, it's either going to be the retread route or the draft route.
All right, now we got Kirby Wilson, who reports indicated at the time when Bruce Arians was leaving Pittsburgh that he was the likely candidate to succeed him as offense coordinator. Then he was burned in a house fire and had, obviously rehab issues, and it set him back from a professional standpoint. He coached the running backs in Minnesota this year, where, despite the fact that they lost Adrian Peterson, Matt Asiata was a serviceable running back. So was Jerick McKinnon at times. They didn't have a whole lot of threats to draw attention away from them. I haven't really broken down Minnesota's running game, but what do you know about Wilson, and how likely of a candidate do you think he is?
I think a long shot. I mean, because he just, he, you know, I think if I was looking for this coordinator, one would be he would have coordinator experience, play calling experience, and also be pretty in tune on how to coach quarterbacks, because, you know, it's great to have a running game, but number five is your key. So, but in terms of Wilson, his connection through Gus is he coached on Pete Carroll's staff in New England, 97-99. Dwayne Walker was also on that staff. So New England, Washington, Tampa, Arizona, Pittsburgh, Minnesota. So a ton of running back experience coaching them. But, you know, 1,000-yard rushers. He had Edgerrin James in Arizona, Rashad Mendenhall, Willie Parker in Pittsburgh. So Curtis Martin at the beginning of his career in New England. So he's coached some good guys. But, I mean, you really don't have a sample size of him. You know, you can't go back and watch one of their games. Okay, what did he do on first and 10?
Right.
So, and I think the same is true for Roman.
Yeah, well, so right now, and there may be more candidates that haven't been named yet or that they're considering or will consider, but it sounds like you'd handicap it Roman, then a Gap, then Wilson, and then Trestman.
Yeah, of the three names
so far.
Yes,
publicly.
And I would almost put like the top four or five candidates aren't available yet. I just think that's what he's waiting for.
So you think that's one of the reasons why they're kind of slow playing, or it seemed to be. I mean, really, that's been kind of the trend around the league a little bit. Nobody's really jumping and acting quickly, although interviews are taking place. I'm not seeing any major hires being done for the most part.
Yeah, and from Gus's standpoint, you want to get your ducks in a row, but you have to wait for all those other things to happen first, because, you know, if Team X hires somebody else and lets their assistants go, does that free guys up?
Right.
You know? So it's almost like, and it's sort of weird that at least one of these head coaching openings hasn't happened yet.
It is strange.
It's been 11 days.
Most people feel, for instance, that Rex Ryan, if he wants the Atlanta job, that's the most likely pairing there, for instance. Mm-hmm. But the fact that it hasn't happened yet, it's kind of interesting. And you wonder if they're as well waiting to say, hey, you know what, let's wait one more week, and maybe there's a coordinator or two out there that we'd like to take a look at.
And then you look at Atlanta is with their front office shakeup yesterday with Dimitroff and Pioli rearranging some stuff, and is Dimitroff in control of the roster, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, that delays their search, but one thing where I think the Jaguars did it right and Shai did it right 2 years ago, he basically was adamant, I'm going GM first, that guy's going to hire the coach. Well, now you got Chicago, the Jets, they're interviewing guys
head coaching candidates and GM candidates,
yeah, okay,
right.
Well, at some point you have to make a decision to hire one first. And so I think that's also slowing the process down. They're juggling two balls at once.
Yeah, I think everybody would clearly like to hire their GM first, but for whatever reason, those couple of teams not getting it done up until this point. It does seem like we usually by this time we'd have five openings right now? At least a couple of them would be filled.
Yeah, usually they are. And Ryan, it seems like you're under the opinion that the Jags and Gus Bradley are going to be looking for a guy that's going to help the running game at that offensive coordinator spot. With Blake being the guy that you're trying to build this thing around, is that the direction you would take it to?
I'm always torn on it because I like watching passing game. The fact that they feel like they'll take another step forward on defense next year if they make an addition or two. You know, are they, if they combine that with a better running game and, you know, sort of take the air out of the football a little bit, I think that may be the best recipe for to win, because you don't really, you know, you maybe take some of the stuff off Bortles' plate. Not so much in terms of volume, but maybe some of the pressure. And so he doesn't have to run it a lot. And can do some more of the drop back stuff, play action, throw it down the field. I mean, I'll disagree or agree with it when I see who the guy is.
Let's go to the phone, 641-1010, the number if you'd like to get on board. Mike Dempsey, Ryan O'Halloran, Fat Tony here with you at Jaguars today. We'll start with David this morning on 1010XL. Good morning, David. How are you?
Hey, good morning. How are you?
Good.
Now, you guys are the experts. I'm not. But I'm just going by what I heard in the press conferences and whatnot with the coach, and he wants to play faster. And to me, that reading between the lines, I would say he's looking more for a Trestman, or this might be way, way out of the box, but do you think there's any way, shape, or form that he's waiting for like Helfrich to be finished with his season and I appreciate it. Thanks.
Well, not, I mean, not Helfrich, but, you know, I mean, he's tried the college coordinator route. That didn't work.
Right.
Even though Jed had NFL experience as a position coach. But in terms of playing fast, during that press conference, and I told Gus, he's talking a little bit circles. To me, I think for him, fast has a different meaning than to us, which fast to me means no huddle.
Fast, right. Well, you get lined up and you don't let the defense substitute, that kind of thing.
I think for him, he's looking, and he uses this word all the time, is precision. He feels that maybe guys were thinking too much and they're playing slower for that. So I think that's maybe his term of fast.
He's talking about playing, like actually executing plays, like because you're not thinking it through, right?
Yes.
You're reacting. It's second nature at that point.
Yeah, I mean, because we get, you know, he was given ample opportunities to follow up by saying, well, do you want to run more on a huddle? He said, no. I think that's still going to be an element because I think that Blake does that well. But I think he's looking for more of the, you know, what can this guy do to get his players into a better comfort level?
Yeah, how comfortable was Blake with the offense that they were running here this year? Because it felt like over the course of the last month of the season that he regressed in some ways. The offense certainly didn't get any better over the course of the last month compared to the first 2 months that he was playing.
Well, I mean, I thought Bortles made some progress over the last 6 weeks of the season just on basis of turnovers.
Yeah, cutting down his turnovers,
sure. And,
right?
And I think in terms of he did extend some plays. He's going to be a guy that that gets sacked a lot. He's going to throw some interceptions because he doesn't want to throw it away and wants to extend those plays. But I think his comfort level with the offense, When he first started, Jed said, okay, they're adding some stuff Blake likes because he has the pen on the, you know, cross out stuff, add stuff. He didn't really hear that as much. Okay, so did Jed say, hey, you know, that's fine, but this is what we're going to run. This is my best stuff. So I think that would impact the quarterback's comfort level, but there didn't ever appear to be an issue during a game where he just didn't know what was going on. You know, whether he ran it well or not, but there didn't seem to be a lot of, you know, communication issues, you know, delay of games, running the wrong play, et cetera.
I want to get back to that in a second. Let's get a couple more calls on 641-1010. The fan feedback spotlight today asking you, with Dave Caldwell on his 2-year anniversary of being hired as general manager here, what's the single best and worst move that he has made? You can weigh in on the phones or on Twitter or Facebook on that one. Let's go to Steve up next here on 1010XL. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning, fellas.
What's up?
I'm gonna go with the best move. I'm gonna go with Marks. The worst move, I'm gonna go with either not re-signing Derek Smith or signing Tovis. I'm gonna go with Tovis because you brought him in to replace Jones Drew. Looking at the season, even though Jones Drew didn't look the same, he still had over 800 yards and he missed 5 games. He would have played 5 games. Percentage would have been high. They really got over 1,000 with the offensive line that was better than this past season, but not the greatest. And with Toby, it was like he didn't do nothing. He got hurt. He came back. He got beat out by Denard, and which with that, you gave Toby the starting job over Denard. He didn't even give the chance, even though your philosophy is competition. And then with Toby, he was getting bust down by safeties and cornerbacks on 1-on-1. It wasn't that effective on 3rd-and-1s or 4th-and-1s. So it's like, what is the point? You messed up Sinatone because he wasn't. To me, he didn't cut it.
All right.
Good to hear from Denard's cousin.
No, well, look, first of all, I don't think anybody's going to argue that Toby Gerhart had a great year.
No.
But to start out your point by comparing him to Maurice Jones-Drew, Toby Gerhart had a Pro Bowl season compared to what Maurice had this year.
43 for 96.
96
I'm
yards.
I'm looking at it right now.
96 yards total this 2. Year.
2.2 a carry.
And he started the year as a starter.
Yeah.
But couldn't push the pile an inch and, you know.
Well, I mean, in terms of Denard, he got his shot because Gerhart got hurt, which is how a lot of guys in this league get their shot. Denard took advantage of that shot. The only reason he lost his starting spot is he got hurt. So if Robinson had not been injured, he would have been the starter all the way through.
To the end of the year.
To the end of the year.
Right. And
he
I don't
earn that.
Look, you sign guys a lot of time. And I know you talk about competition, all right, but you sign certain guys
to start.
To start. And they're going to be given the starting job, and then they can, the competition is, you can push them out of there eventually, but when you go out and spend that money on Zane Beatles, you knew Zane Beatles was going to start at left guard this year. Mm-hmm. Didn't really matter what happened. It would have had to be an utter catastrophe. For Toby, he was banged up in training camp a lot. I think they still felt like they saw what they saw on tape and that he could be effective. Clearly he wasn't very effective this year. But you go into next year, and that's why, you know, we talked about this near the top of the show. I think you're in the minority in terms of thinking that they would spend a pick as high as the second round on a running back. I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility. If you feel like there's nothing glare, if there's no instant impact starter that you feel like could come in, because I do think if there is a guy that could help you, who would start for you at outside linebacker, for instance, would be your next Otto. Okay. And I don't know who that guy would be, but if there was that guy there, I think it's easier to wait on the running back unless you really feel like, wow, Todd Gurley is just too special a talent to bypass, because we've seen the track record in recent years, fourth, fifth, sixth round guys come in and at the running back spot and contribute a lot quicker than most any other position drafted late.
And I think a lot of that depends on what do they get accomplished in free agency?
Right. If, of course, all this, know, all this.
And I think especially in the Jaguars case, because, they need a free safety. They need an Otto. They're probably going to need a starting tight end. Let's say you get two of those three done in free agency. Well, then that changes your draft stuff. I mean, if you're at the third pick, you know, does that impact? It obviously impacts. You're not going to take a running back at three, but let's say you have two glaring needs, you know, tight end and outside linebacker. We may need to take care of those first two rounds. Well, then that pushes running back down the third round, which is a lot of people think is the more value there. But it all depends on if they feel this back is a guy who can step in right away, I wouldn't hesitate taking him in the second round.
And that's one position where I think you do want to go young at, because, you know, the general consensus is right now, spend money in free agency on offense because you got a lot of youth and you want to, and it makes sense. But like you said, you can't guarantee that you're going to get the guy you want. So you may end up with a hole at tight end. Maybe you can sign Julius Thomas to Charles Clay or Jordan Cameron. Maybe you can't. You just don't know at this point in time.
Well, and also the other thing is like, I agree with the most part with that premise is you don't want to be adding a ton of more young guys on offense, but also the right tackle market, even for backups and free agency, is terrible. So, okay, is that drafting a guy later on and add to that competition? You know, tight end, can you add a veteran tight end? You're pretty much going to stick with those receivers. So it's going to be – you look at the market, it's going to be tough to add a lot of veterans to the offense.
All right, we got to take a break for a minute. I thought we were in the next segment already. I guess we kind of are. So 641-1010 if you'd like to get on board. Tweet us at MD_1010XL, at Ryan O'Halloran, at 1010XL, Fat Tony. Jaguars Today continues on 1010XL 92.5 FM. All right, we continue along Jaguars Today. Mike Dempsey, Ryan O'Halloran, and Fat Tony here with you on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Gotta love it. When TJ walks in here and says, non-PPR. Tony, any sentence that starts with non-PPR, my ears perk up. Oh, we're still doing that. Yes, playoff fantasy football, no question about it. Shameless plug department, Alfie Crow. Tweeting at me because, you know, he knows I'll go for a shameless plug at AlfieBCC on Twitter. Posted a nice article on Big Cat Country. I wasn't going to mention it until media mogul Brent Martineau retweeted his tweet to me, and then I felt compelled to mention he threw some candidates out there, including a guy that we talked a little bit about, at least mentioned earlier in the week, Scott Linehan, the passing game coordinator for the Dallas Cowboys. I don't know if they're looking for a run focused guy if you hire a passing game coordinator, but I like what Linehan's been able to do at his various stops in the league offensively. Not always an immediate impact, such as when he went to Detroit and they had a rookie quarterback in Matt Stafford, but by his third year, they were top six in the league in offense and stayed there until he left when Jim Schwartz got the job there. So you can check that out at BigCatCountry.com if you're so inclined. Look for a couple of off-the-radar candidates.
Let's throw another. We haven't touched on it yet about this job is – internally, you look at year three being, okay, can they go, if they go three, you know, if they go from three wins to six or seven, they'll buy everybody a fourth year in terms of the head coach. I think he's not in doubt or anything like that. But how is he going to have, is he having to do a lot of selling? You know, is he having, because from outside,
selling to a candidate sweat. Saying, yeah. You're on the brink right here. If we don't turn it around, if I don't have an immediate impact, I'm going to be out of a job.
Yeah, so if I'm a position coach at, you know, do I leave my situation? So, you know, maybe they'll have to do a little bit longer contract. If I'm a position coach, I still take the leap because there's only one of 32 in these.
Right, and those contracts are typically guaranteed, right?
Yeah, you know, at least 2-year deal. So it'd be interesting to be a fly on the wall when these things get started to see what Gus sees as a vision for this team next year.
One thing I think we overlook sometimes in these conversations is uprooting your family, you know, and that's, it's a legitimate concern. You know, if somebody wanted to hire you, Ryan, and you were like, I don't know if this job is going to last more than a year, you know, if you had four kids or three kids, whatever, you may not be as inclined to make that move. It is kind of the nature of the profession, though. You know, when you get into it, that there's a great likelihood you're going to have many stops around either the college or professional ranks, if you're lucky enough. Everybody wants to find that one spot that they can stay for a while, but it's not always the case. Mm-hmm. And typically there's quite a bit of turnover. So let's go back to the phone, 641-1010. John, next up with a question about offense coordinator candidates. What's up, John?
Hey there, guys. I was just wondering, after, you know, Jed Fish kind of fizzled out, how cutting edge and innovative they're actually looking to go with offense. I mean, there are some of the, you know, cutting edge candidates out there, like I don't know, like Scott Frost or something. And then I don't really know if they would be looking for people who have never called plays before, because they're looking, you know, this is kind of their make or break year. Like Kirby Wilson has never called plays, but like Ben Owens has never called plays. But what exactly are they looking for this year? Because if, regardless of who they hire, if it's a good hire, then they'll keep them. But what are they looking for specifically?
I don't get the sense they're looking to do something exotic.
No,
on
I mean, if they wanted like no cutting edge and no innovation, I'm available. Because I just run four verticals every play.
Of course you would. You and Pete Prisco. Two of you.
Trying to pick my way through what he, our caller said. Scott Frost is the Oregon offensive coordinator.
Yeah. Right. Which, is he innovative, or do they just continue to run Chip Kelly's system? Yeah, you know, right. And they've done a good job continuing that.
Run 1,000 plays a game. Yeah, I think Scott's next job is a college head coach. He wasn't interested in the Colorado State job, which obviously McElwain went to Florida for. In terms of play calling experience, to me, that's the first box you check, because Gus is a defensive guy. I think he wants a guy that can be the CEO of the offense and can lead this staff in harmony and get some more production, whereas Gus can be more of a walk-around guy. I mean, I think Jerry Jones was on NFL Live yesterday, and he's a great point about the hiring of Lenahan. Jerry wants his head coach to be a walk-around guy instead of having to do the game plan, call the plays, et cetera. I think Gus wants to be more in that role instead of having to put out fires all over the place.
But as we were talking about, he thinks a solid running game is the quickest way to improve this team in the standings, right? That to me, you can have innovative running games, I suppose, but that to me seems more meat and potatoes, right? It's not, I don't think you're looking for the next Chip Kelly type guy if you're Gus
Correct.
Bradley. So, yeah. I think that's along the lines of what John was talking about. John, thank you for the call. Let's go to Ron up next this morning on 1010XL. Good morning, Ron. How are you?
Hey, fellas. Love the show. I think the best move was the second round last year, getting those two stud young receivers. I was amazed we could get both of them in the second round last year, and I think they're going to be a building blocks for this team. And then I think the worst move was Eugene Monroe, letting him go before Jokel was ready. And I'm still not sure that Jokel is ready to play left tackle, because I don't know if that's ever even a discussion of moving him over to the right side and finding a left tackle if there's one more available. But my question was, when does the actual free agency period start? And I'll take it off the air. Thank you.
Free agency starts March 10th. So, and prior to then, they can negotiate with some of their own players and could sign some of their own players.
Yeah.
But, you know, the free agency season unofficially kicks off at the combine with conversations under the table, behind closed doors. That's why on March 10th, you'll see deals done 2 minutes after the market opens. And on his best and worst.
But for now, though, that's finally allowed, at least to some degree.
Yeah, yeah.
It's always gone
There's
on,
a negotiating window like 3 or 4 days before
right.
where it's you can actually exchange.
At least now there's cover for yes. them when they get that deal done at 12:01 a.m.
Yeah. But, and on his best and worst, you know, that two receiver thing, I never thought of that because I just look at best and worst in terms of free agency. I mean, when Lee fell to him, they never thought he was going to be there.
Right.
And then when they took Marquise, they said, okay, well, we really like Allen Robinson, but I don't think we're going to get him. Well,
and he continued to slide.
And they continued to slide, and they made a deal. That Eugene Monroe decision, that helped them get Robinson and Linder with that those extra
right,
two picks.
Right, those two picks. So that is a good way of looking at it because he, you know, talking about the best and worst in one, without that worst move, you didn't have that. Caller's best move, so to
Cole
speak.
Best,
that's a really good point. I don't think Luke Jokel will ever play right tackle by anyone's choice unless something crazy happens. If the guy's right now, the big knock on him is he's not strong enough for left tackle, he's certainly not strong enough to play right tackle. I mean, right tackle is typically more of your, quote, mauler type guy, right? Your strength guy in the running game. So, you know, look, he's the left tackle of this football team. They're invested in it, bringing him along and developing him as much as possible. They feel like last offseason he couldn't spend as much time on getting better as he needed to because he was spending time on rehabbing instead of working to hone the finer points of his craft.
Yeah, and Jokel's thing, and that's another thing that's going to come up during this interview process, is George Yarno's future and – if this guy has a hire, who would be your O-line coach? Because that's the main project is Jokel.
Right. And wouldn't you think that, obviously, you're going to leave that up to an offensive coordinator, you would think. But I would think that right now, Gus Bradley would take George Yarno back in a heartbeat.
Yeah, and just a matter of the reports he gets back from him. But, I mean, you could see there's going to be several new offensive assistants.
Now, Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history brought to you this week by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. I don't know if I really want to do this one. State in football history. Playoff, big play. What are the big plays in the last 20 years in the playoffs? What stands out to you?
Oh, I know exactly where you're going.
You know
with
where
this.
It is.
Yeah, this is Demaryius Thomas for 80 yards, correct?
No, this is Music City Miracle.
Oh, was it the Music City Miracle today,
Music
too?
Music City Miracle. This was it. Was Demaryius Thomas' play today as well?
Yeah, the Tebow.
I don't
Thomas
care about
play.
That. Whatever.
Yeah.
He made a play. He beat the Steelers. Hey, I'll find a positive in any of these things, Tony. It was
nothing good about the Music City Miracle.
Former Jaguar quarterback Rob Johnson had what would have been his biggest moment in the NFL. People forget he led them down to take the lead with whatever it was, 16 seconds left or however many. Yeah, 16 seconds remaining. 16-15, he led them down to the go-ahead field goal. Basically must-have situation. And who knows how this goes. This is January 8th, 2000. This is, of course, the Jags were 14-2 and would go on to lose to Tennessee for the third time. Rob Johnson, if they hold on and Kevin Dyson doesn't score on that play, who knows? Maybe the Jags have a Super Bowl championship.
Yeah, and it wasn't supposed to be Dyson over there in that position on that play. He was supposed to be the one throwing the ball on that play, but whoever it was on the Titans side that was supposed to throw it fell down. So Dyson went and just, he was like, all right.
Whoever's supposed to run it fell
down.
Yeah,
he improvised, basically, and Wycheck wound up with the ball, threw it across the field to Dyson, and they wound up scoring on the play. But that's not how that one was designed. They actually scrambled to make that work.
They made it work regardless, and a 75-yard touchdown provided a 22-15 victory, the Music City Miracle. As I recall, 16 seconds is a lot of time on a kickoff return. There was a point, and I guess the clock was not going to run out, but I wonder if there was any point Kevin Dyson considered running out of bounds and saying, we're in field goal range.
Right.
And because if I get caught and we run out of time, but 16 seconds the likelihood of getting caught, probably pretty low at that point in time. Never to be mentioned again. for the remainder of 2015, the Music City Miracle happy anniversary. Or
yeah, it took 13 seconds.
Why didn't Buffalo run it back with those remaining 3 seconds?
Come that would have been awesome.
Wouldn't that have been? By the way, I watched the Deadspin had, hey, do you remember this? The Plano, Texas high school game from a year ago. Do you remember that? It was like 41-16 with a couple minutes left. And I think Plano, East Plano or whatever had it. And they score, recover the onside kick, score, recover the onside kick, score, recover the onside. I mean, like 4 consecutive times. And then there are a few seconds left. They kick it deep, and the guy runs it back 90-something yards for a touchdown.
20 years ago?
Was it 20? I thought it was just like a year ago.
Yeah, I think it was 20th anniversary.
Was that what it was?
Crazy announcers?
Yes, yeah. You did have. Oh, was it that long ago? Yeah. Okay, because maybe I just misunderstood the headline because I watched the video. They had like a 4.5-minute video package of all the plays spliced together. And that guy's like, yeah, the announcer's like, you know, thick Texas accent. Y'all never see this again. It's the greatest comeback in the history of ever.
Those two announcers parlayed that into a role in the football classic Varsity Blues.
Did they?
How about that?
Was Varsity Blues good? I'm trying to remember.
Yes.
I think it was, right? Was
I
it?
I did like it.
Yeah. I think
I don't want your life.
I can't remember a thing about it, but I seem to remember liking it. What can I tell you, man? I can't remember anything these days. Yesterday I called Casey Weldon, Chris Wanky at least 3 times, mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure, at the end of the program. I'm sure everyone who was listening at that time and decided they'll never listen again because I don't know what I'm talking about aren't around to hear me, mea culpa, on that. The State in Football History brought to you by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. Right there on Gate Parkway, if you need a family dentist, if you need some cosmetic work done, you want to look into a custom fit, stop snoring mouth guard, 620-9225, or visit jamesjmccall.com for a complete list of comprehensive care options. That is this date in football history.
Now, the Honda Drive around the NFL, brought to you by your Jacksonville area Honda dealers.
Well, a couple of teams being added to the list that are looking for new offensive coordinators. The St. Louis Rams will be joining that list in a search for a new coordinator after Brian Schottenheimer, who has been in St. Louis for the last 3 seasons, accepted the same job at the University of Georgia yesterday.
Has there ever been a team that Schottenheimer's coach that the fans thought he was doing a good job? Ever?
No.
He throws it. You want to talk about throwing it sideways? This guy throws it sideways more than anybody in football.
23rd, 30th, 25th. That's what the St. Louis Rams have ranked in offense.
That Schottenheimer name, O'Halloran. We're born with the wrong name, man. They keep throwing money at you.
Also today, the Cleveland Browns are expected to announce they are parting ways with offensive coordinator Kyle Shanahan. Shanahan finishing just his first year as the offensive coordinator in Cleveland. The Browns' offense was ranked 23rd in yards, 27th in points. The Browns were also the only AFC North team that did not make the playoffs this year, finishing 7-9. And the Indianapolis Colts will be in Denver this weekend for the divisional round of the playoffs. Last week, running back Trent Richardson, whom the Colts gave up a first-round pick to acquire a couple seasons ago, played 1 snap after being sick for the week leading up to the game. The Colts are still unclear on what role, if any, Richardson could potentially have this weekend. Dan Heron, who started the playoff game last week, fumbled twice during the game, and the team has signed another running back this week, and Michael Hill, maybe now that the team is in the playoffs, they aren't willing to hand it to Richardson 10 times for the 30 yards that he's good for.
Yeah, and Heron did fumble it twice, but they actually praised him after the game,
the
coaching staff, for how well he played. He caught 10 passes for 85 yards, and that ran for, I think, 57 with a touchdown in that game. So heavy volume for him. You don't want to see him lay it on the ground, certainly. Yesterday, we had Russ Landy on. You know the name. He's currently the college scouting director for the Montreal Alouettes. And we asked him a number of things. One thing Tony brought up with him, he asked him to refresh our memory on his evaluation of Blake Bortles. Said he really didn't like him that much coming out of college. Really had questions about his footwork and different aspects, and didn't know if he was going to make it. And watching him this year, he said, he feels completely better about him, which I found to be interesting because after the hot start, the quick glance at Blake Bortles, 4 pick sixes, bunch of interceptions, low ranking total offense. We understand the circumstances that go into it, but I thought that was interesting. And he went as far to say, Ryan, that there was, and I'm paraphrasing here, but there was no doubt in his mind that Bortles was clearly a better long-term prospect than either Jameis Winston or Marcus Mariota. What do you think about that?
I would agree with him definitely on Mariota. I'm fascinated by Winston. I'd take him number one overall.
I think Winston, if I didn't have any questions, mm-hmm. I feel the same way. I think I if I'm the Bucs, I think the better player for the pros is Jameis Winston. But I do think if your job is on the line and you roll the dice, I mean, I guess if your job's on the line, that's when you do roll the dice, right? But you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
It's tough to hitch your wagon and make that guy the face of the franchise, because then if something happens, it's so easy to say, you should have seen it coming. How did you not see this coming? What kind of decision making are you putting into this?
Well, I think Dave Caldwell's decision last year to draft Bortles, with the philosophy being he was going to be the best quarterback in this
coming
draft.
That's what he said. That's what he felt.
I think he's right on that. But also, I think the thing he also was thinking, take one now because you don't know if you're going to be in a position to take one of the top guys next year. To me, that's where he hit the home run, is I'm not sold on Mariota. Winston has those concerns. So let's say, but also let's say you're the third team picking a quarterback. There is a significant drop-off from Winston, Mariota, down to probably Hundley.
That Hundley seems to be now the third guy, who at one point, though, was considered last year a potential top 10 pick if he came out last year. Who knows? Maybe he would have been.
And he could be this year's Bortles, where he throws at the combine.
I think there's a chance of that, because he's got – you look
he'll
at
be
that
overdrafted.
Guy. That guy is built like you would, you know, draw the mold up for a professional quarterback. But that's what Dave Caldwell said. And ultimately, look – you know, we got a flood of tweets on this yesterday. And to a man, I think everyone who called Russell Andy crazy was a Seminole fan. They had Seminoles in their Twitter names or their avatars or whatever. And that's fine. And you may be right. But Dave Caldwell didn't do it for fun and games. You know, he's putting his job on the line. He's taking the guy. He's not saying it to appease anyone, not appease anyone. You know, that was his evaluation then, and I gotta believe it stands now.
Yeah, because you never know what kind of progress or regression a guy's gonna make with an extra year of college. I mean, as of right now, Brett Hundley probably hurt his status by staying the next year.
Didn't help it, but it was super high to begin with. He really couldn't go up.
Yes.
So
you look at it from the Jaguars' perspective. After free agency last year, they probably thought, okay, is this a 5-win team? You know, could they improve by one or two
wins?
Sure.
And then you're picking 10th.
And then you're out of you're out of that race.
You may be out of it anyway at 3. Yeah,
you may be.
Right? Yeah. Because if the Bucs desperately want their quarterback, well, they're not going to trade down to 3, right? Much like the Jags last year. If they had the conviction of Bortles, and nobody's saying by saying they had the conviction in them that they're right. Time will tell whether they're right or not. But that was their conviction, and if that's how you felt, you don't risk moving back.
Yeah, because,
right?
You know, because the risk would have been not so much the team sitting there at that point taking Bortles. It would have been somebody like Minnesota.
But jumping up there ahead, because now you got a range of picks for them to make that move.
So if I'm Tampa, anytime you take a quarterback, number one, it's definitely a gamble. But I think I'd hitch my wagon to Winston as opposed to Mariota.
I think I would, too. And right now the consensus seems to be the opposite of that. But I think that's because they see Mariota's a choir boy, clean from that aspect. And he may be. You know, I'm not knocking that. But I would agree with you just in terms of the on-field stuff. I think it would be pretty much close to a slam dunk if from a pro angle, if he didn't have all the off-field concerns, Winston, that is.
Yeah, and I think you look at – and I think Tampa Bay a good situation for him. Lovie Smith, a very powerful personality, has been leading teams for a long time. Maybe he feels he'll be the right fit for Jameis.
Maybe so. And you got these two really big receivers, presuming Vincent Jackson's back. I mean, two 6'4", 6'5", guys, a la Kelvin Benjamin, you know, and which gives you a little bit – more, I mean, it would help Mariota too. It would help either one of these guys, but it's a pretty good situation to walk into, I think, if you're a quarterback with those two receivers already on the roster.
And that division is an arms race. Breeze, Cam, Matt Ryan. So you need the trigger man.
Yeah. So let's say the Bucs did go one of those guys. I mean, Tennessee's not going to do anything to help you get your quarterback. If the Jags were sitting here with Chad Henne at the top of the depth chart, they'd be screwed in a lot of senses, or they'd have to potentially pay, you know, just a king's ransom to move up even a spot to assure that they get the guy that they want.
Yeah, and that includes trading next year's one and, you know, a two or a three, a big, big package of picks.
We'll talk about one thing I want to get on with you is the range of positions you think – obviously, free agency will dictate a large degree. But what do you think the range of positions as we sit here today for the Jags' first pick, if it remains somewhere in the top 10, if they trade back to 9 or 8 or 10 or whatever the case may be, what are the range of positions you think would be under consideration for that selection? We talked a little bit about that yesterday. He is Ryan O'Halloran from the Florida Times Union. I'm Mike Dempsey along with Fat Tony here on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Taking more of your calls at 641-1010 live in the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM. All right, we continue along Jaguars Today, 1010XL 92.5 FM, 641-1010, the number if you'd like to get on board. Mike Dempsey, Ryan O'Halloran, Fat Tony here with you on this Thursday. Ryan, yesterday we were just asking Jag fans, trying to get a little bit of a baseline. It's only January, and clearly free agency will change a lot of this, but I'm not going to sit here and wait until, you know, March 20th, 10 days into free agency, to start talking drafts. So, that being said, I think the consensus feeling is overwhelmingly, if the Jags stay at 3, they're going to take a pass rusher of some sort, right? You just brought up on the break the scenario, what if it goes quarterback Leonard Williams, right? The first two picks. Because I think right now, if I had to bet, that's how it's going to go. I don't think Tennessee is going to go for a quarterback with the second pick in the draft. I think they've saw at least enough of Zach Mettenberger to intrigue them. They've got a lot of issues as well. So let's say it does, and Leonard Williams seems to be a guy that, you know, people think would be a lock to come here to Jacksonville and succeed, and maybe he would. But if they're off the board, still, whether it's Randy Gregory, Shane Ray, pass rusher at that spot, most likely, right?
I think so, because I don't think part of their plan of free agency is going to be to add a pass rusher.
What about JPP? Would you spend money on Jason Pierre-Paul? I would.
It depends on how much.
I'd pay him $10 million a year.
I would too.
I don't know what the, you know, I don't, what is JJ Watt's probably making, 20? Mm-hmm. Right? I'd pay him 10. Now he may get more than that. I may be way off on his valuation as far as that, but with all the cap space they have.
He's 26 with 42 sacks.
Give me a guy with his athleticism and upside. I mean, he's upside. He's ready to play right now. You know, his question to me is sustaining health, but we talked about this yesterday too. Imagine if you signed Jason Pierre-Paul. He's going to be your Leo, basically, and you have Leonard Williams come in on the other side. You've got another year of Clemens and Bryant. All of a sudden, you got one of the best defensive lines in the National Football League, if everyone's healthy, potentially.
Mm-hmm. Interesting thought.
I like it, man. I do. That's the one defensive player that I'd really like to see them go hog wild on. Okay, let's say the Jags get a trading partner somewhere late in the top 10, and they want to come up and take Jameis Winston or Marcus Mariota because they're on the board in this scenario. What is the range of positions you think is open to the Jacksonville Jaguars, provided they stay somewhere within the top 10? I'm not saying at 3 now. I'm saying if they, in a trade-back scenario. What's on the board for them?
Well, there's definitely going to be defensive linemen because, you know, you look at one rankings here, they got 3 in the top 10, which would be Williams, Gregory, and Ray. Let's see, if you're in the top 10, pretty good chance you're going to get one of those. You got like, you know, Landon Collins is Alabama strong safety. I'm not touching any Alabama safeties after the Mark Barron debacle.
Right.
But so you knock him off. Mari Cooper, receiver, Alabama, not a need in the first round.
But you don't think that there's any way they'd consider a guy like that in that scenario. Let's say they found out by draft time that Justin Blackman's not coming back. He's not going to be in the picture.
Well, I think they'll take care of that in free agency.
I think they likely will as well.
Mari Cooper would be bold. He would be fun to watch because it'd be interesting to see how whoever calls the plays would use him. You know, if you get down to the lower part of top 10, if you don't get a linebacker in free agency, do you go to the guy like Shaq Thompson from Washington, who's an outside linebacker who had 6'2", 231, probably is able to cover, a pretty versatile guy. So if you move down, you know, it's so much different than the last couple of years where they had needs everywhere. You just take two of those, one of those, three
of
those.
Yeah, sure.
So all depends. And really, this year it does impact free agency. It does impact the Jaguar draft
big time.
But it depends. Do they feel like if they go from 3 They go from 3 to 8. Can they still get a defensive end that they like? And also, can they get a pick later that will help them either stay put and get a running back or move up to get a running back?
Would offensive line be a consideration in your opinion?
It doesn't appear like the value would be there in the top 10. I think if let's say they had their eyes set on the Iowa left tackle and we're going to move on the right tackle, they say. Sounds like just looking at some rankings, you could probably move down a little bit further than 9 or 10 for him. 3, do you move down to 12? It's, you know, and
I don't know. Sure, I've seen projections of him all kind of all over the
board. I watched him on TV. I watched him like for a quarter and a half. He didn't block anybody.
Yeah, and people also claim that he's going to be better suited to play guard. I'm not telling you I know who the guy would be, but I do think it opens up. If you're in that 9-10 range and you've got a guy you think who's a walk-in starter and significantly upgrades the right tackle position, depending, again, what you've done in free agency, I think it's at least under consideration at that point in time. Do they, though, we talked about they want to sign offense because they need more veteran experience, right? Yeah. And they need more playmakers, but they need guys that have made plays in the National Football League. They're already incredibly young at the skill positions on offense, at least wide receiver, and they want to draft defense. How much do they adhere to that, though? Because I agree with you. If you're going to get a running back, draft a running back, whether it's the second round, whether it's this year or next year, give me the freshest set of legs I could possibly have, and let's run them into the ground for the next 4 years. But beyond that, can they afford to add more when you've got Linder and Belanco going in the second year, Jokel going into his third year, but he's barely played a full season? Can you add another rookie and expect him to come in and compete for a starting job and really improve that offensive line?
I would say no. In the first round, because after that, if you want to draft a guy in the third or fourth or fifth round and bring him along, and if he starts in week four because he's a better guy, fine. I think let me throw this scenario at you. Mariota goes 1, Leonard Williams goes 2. I think that's the best scenario for the Jags if they want to move down, because the Jets at 6 would call him right away for Winston.
You don't think they'd call him for Mariota?
I'm sure they'd get a lot of calls on that. That would be a Jet thing to do.
It's interesting because you're right, it would be. Certainly traditionally, we don't know who the GM's going to be at this point in time, or the head coach for that matter. And there's been at least some question. Do you bring Jameis Winston into the glare of the New York media with, you know, 7 major daily newspapers covering the team in the locker room every single day, looking and digging for anything that could possibly go wrong? I think it's a legitimate question. And you're right, in the past, their track record is they don't care. They're fine with the circus atmosphere. Again, I think a lot will be determined by the GM. But I think that, to me, the ideal scenario is having Leonard Williams and one of the quarterbacks sitting there to create the biggest trade market. But then the Titans would have to fall in love with a guy like Randy Gregory or something else at that point in time. Mm-hmm. And I think that's wishful thinking on my part right now. Although we sit here, how many years, Tony, have we sat here and done this? How many years have the consensus top 3 picks in January ended up being the top 3 picks at draft time?
It doesn't happen very often, but it does feel like Leonard Williams is going to stay where he is.
It seems like
the talk about him isn't quite like it is with a bunch of the other guys that we've seen kind of fluctuate there at the top of the draft. You're talking about a guy who's versatile enough to play defensive end or defensive tackle. He's 6'5", 290 pounds. Those kind of guys don't generally get moved around a whole lot when it comes to draft boards.
Yeah, on Williams right now, there is not a but wait a minute scenario.
Right.
The only thing really stopping him from being a top 3 or 4 pick is he failed a drug test at combine.
Right.
Yeah, So, but you look at the top.
Even then, it might not be enough.
You know, you look at the top picks is, this is how weird of a year it could be. You sort of think the Raiders, okay, maybe they do have a plan. You know,
why do we think that?
Because they have a quarterback and they have some good players on defense. You know, they're not going to be,
including Khalil Mack, by the way, who had a good rookie year.
He really did.
He did have a good rookie year.
But he didn't help them win any games.
Oh my goodness.
I was half right.
No, you were not half right. You said he was going to be a bust because he played for Buffalo, is what you said.
Still could be.
Well, all right.
Here are the wild cards. Is the Redskins are at 5 hiring a new GM. is what did they do with Griffin? Are they going to make the asinine, idiotic decision to give up on him?
I don't think they will. I don't think they're in the quarterback market.
Because I don't think the owner's ready to give up on him.
I don't think in the top 10. It's, you know, right.
What do the Bears do? What do they do? I mean, are they able to get rid of Cutler and then try and trade up and get a quarterback? So there's a lot of different there's a lot of intrigue just as there was last year. There's intrigue every year.
You think there'll be a big market for Cutler out there?
I wouldn't think so because just – I mean,
team like Houston.
Yeah.
Who feels – maybe they feel like they're a QB away.
You know, what's their cap situation when, you know, Watt's deal kicks in?
Sure.
So, you know, Houston would be – if I'm Cutler, I'd want to go there and say, okay, I'll redo my deal, no
right,
problem.
Right, right.
It's – but, you know
– what about the Jets in that scenario too?
I just – that would be interesting because he is basically a bad guy.
Seems to be, but yeah. I mean, but a talented bad guy, and those guys get opportunity after opportunity.
And if I'm a first year Jets coach, do I really want to hitch my wagon to Jay Cutler? I think he'd be more suited, maybe have more success with a Bill O'Brien,
right? Or with a guy right who maybe is willing to take a chance because he's down to his last chance mm-hmm. as a head coach.
And that would be Wisenhunt.
Correct. That's a possibility, but he played college football there. It doesn't strike me that that's going to be a Tennessee Titan-ish kind of move. I think Wisenhunt to me is more of a, you know, grind it out kind of, nose to the grindstone kind of. I don't see him putting up with Jay Cutler mm-hmm. personally. That's me. I don't know. I don't know enough about Wisenhunt to say that with certainty. I think we got James on the line next. 641-1010. James, good morning. How are you?
Yes, I was just wondering, say the Jaguars fill all their needs in free agency, or some of their needs, most of the needs, whatever. Could you see them like go ahead and taking Winston and just leaving him open for trade, or
no.
something of that nature?
I could not.
I couldn't either, because then if you're a team, you're like, well, you got to trade him. You got to take my package to offer that I'm offering.
Right.
So you don't really have a lot of leverage.
Yeah. The one time we saw that happen was when San Diego drafted Eli Manning, and basically. Didn't really want him. They wanted Phillip Rivers, or they didn't feel like Manning wanted them, but they felt like they had to take him, and then waited it out till the fourth pick, and the Giants took Rivers. They're able to get a deal done. Very rare for that to happen. One aspect of why it doesn't happen very often is your rookie pool does not get transferred with that guy. Mm-hmm. So your rookie pool is based on the picks you have going into the draft. And if you trade picks ahead of the draft, your rookie pool gets adjusted, but the money you're going to be able to pay these guys, let's say a team like Philadelphia, who people have mentioned, may want to trade up to get Mariota. Let's say he's sitting there for the Jags at 3, and they, in fact, are able to pull something off. Well, they're going to have to pay him based on a pool that had them allocated for money for the 20th pick in the first round. So they're going to have to pull money from their other draft picks to get that done. It's one of the reasons you don't see a whole lot of this stuff going on.
So basically, what they would end up doing is they'd have to trade most of their draft.
Right. Well, you could trade if you trade the pick ahead of time. They come up and get the third pick, then they'll get the pool that corresponds to the third pick. But if the Jags were to draft that guy, it locks in what your rookie pool allotment is. I don't know how big of a stumbling block that is, but it's one of the reasons it's been brought up why there aren't too many of those draft a player and then trade that guy.
In fact, that may be the last time it happened.
It may be. It may be.
11 years ago now?
Right. And look, I don't think there's any chance. If you're a Winston supporter or a believer in his talent, you may think the Jags are crazy to think that Bortles is the better guy. But if you really feel that way and you're Dave Caldwell, why introduce even for a second that guy onto your roster? Not because of his off the field stuff, but because of that's not something that's done to clearly prop up the franchise investment that you have in the number three pick. And then you've got the scenario. It's one thing to pass on a guy in a draft. It's another thing to actually draft him, trade him minutes later, and then have him turn out to be a superstar. Right. You had him on the roster. You had him right there. I don't see any scenario at all where they draft a QB in the first round.
Yeah. And if you're a Winston fan, you don't want that to happen either. You want him to go to a spot where he's no competition.
Tampa is such a more attractive option, in my opinion, than Tennessee right now. I mean, just because of Evans, the presence of Mike Evans alone. I don't know how many more years V-Jax has down there, but the presence of Mike Evans at the top of that depth chart makes it so much more attractive to me than the Tennessee. I mean, Tennessee skill guys right now. Kendall Wright's a solid guy. Justin Hunter's nothing but, you know, the P word, full of potential and, very little actual production. And Bishop Sankey was miserable, this year. You know, they got Delanie Walker. I don't know as a QB if that's the best situation to walk into.
And their O-line is completely in flux.
Right. Which, you know, has been a change from recent years. They had been pretty good for a while. All right, 641-1010 if you want to get in. Thank you for the call, James. We got to take a break. We will come back with a look at the fan feedback spotlight today, asking you on the second anniversary of Dave Caldwell's hiring as general manager of the Jacksonville Jaguars, what is the single best and single worst move, in your opinion, that he's made in his first 2 years on the job? Mike Dempsey, Ryan O'Halloran, and Fat Tony here with you on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Jaguars Today continues in a moment. New Year's resolution, stop getting frustrated by slow computers. I broke that one 7 days ago.
Say, you kidding me?
Oh, my goodness, Tony. Drives me crazy. Absolutely drives me crazy. Trying to reply to a tweet, type it all out, and just... I can't do it. A couple of questions here before we get to the fan feedback spotlight. One of them was from Bobby Brown on Twitter. Yes, the Bobby Brown at BMFB54. Well, speaking of linebackers, you think we bring back JT Thomas or Geno Hayes? My reply was yes to JT, and I'm not sure about Geno, but I don't think he's a priority.
Yeah, I would say yes, and yes on Thomas, no on Hayes. I mean, I talked to Geno after on Week Ago Monday.
Uh-huh.
He was basically, whatever happens, happens. Yeah, I was giving him a chance to say he wanted to be back, but
right.
You know, I think his role diminished when he got moved outside. He was just a first and second down player, but I think they want to re-sign Thomas. Very good special teams player, showed he could play a little linebacker. I think he's more suited to be a depth guy at linebacker.
Yeah, I do too. He's almost a perfect depth guy though, because I think he's versatile across the unit. You can play him almost anywhere, and that is one thing that we talk about when we have Loggeman and Garrard in here a lot, just that you forget the impact on special teams when you have injuries or when you're thin at a certain position, because you know, that's an area where you can't play JT Thomas when he's a full-time starter. You can no longer put him out there on all those units and run him up and down the field. You're going to wear that guy out.
Yeah, like I did some in the last month of the year looking at the week one special teams compared to the week 13. And just for an example, on punt return, there were 8 new guys because McCray, JT, Denard Robinson, other, you know, guys who were special team core guys beginning of the year got thrust in the starting spots. We got it, and then you got to ease back on that. So, and Thomas is a guy, didn't practice, just shows you sometimes the best cuts are the one you don't make.
Right.
Missed all camp with a hamstring injury. I was like, how do you keep this guy on the team? He hasn't shown him anything. They gave him a shot to stay healthy, and he did.
Let's get to the fan feedback spotlight. Today, 2-year anniversary of Dave Caldwell taking over and being hired as the general manager of the Jacksonville Jaguars. Happy anniversary, Dave.
Yeah.
And we asked folks, Tony, today, what is the single best and worst move, in their opinion, that Dave Caldwell has made? And from my eyes, what I saw on Twitter got a ton of variety.
We did. From Paolo, we got best drafting Blake Bortles, worst not being more aggressive when negotiating with Alex Mack. From Chris, best hiring Gus Bradley, worst not enough veteran presence on offense, although he thinks it will pay off. Even Dave admitted as much last week at his press conference. From Bri Rock, we got best even if he's released, worst too much youth on offensive line.
We got
and
that a
free
few times.
Safety from Stevie.
What was his worst?
His worst was too much youth on offensive line and free safety. From Stevie, we got based on return so far, best signing Markson Miller, worst not re-signing Daryl Smith. From Eric, best even if he's released, worst letting Daryl Smith walk, sure could have used him still. From Richard, best Colvin, worst got to be Watson. Hashtag late round picks have been on. From Black Dog, we got best Gus Bradley, worst Daryl Smith. Hashtag nobody's perfect. From Nick, we got best Aaron Colvin, worst letting Daryl Smith go in free agency. And from Brian, best even if he's released, worst letting Daryl Smith walk. A lot of Daryl Smith in there.
It's interesting that we didn't see a lot of best Blake Bortles. We now have a franchise quarterback, and I think that just shows, you know, look, let's hope that that's the case, but time will tell on that. Much as time, I'm not going to say Jokel's the worst either, because time is going to tell on him, but right now he hasn't given you the return that you'd like out of the number two overall pick.
Yeah, yeah, and it just shows you an informed opinion. I mean, it would have been very easy to say Bortles, but I like the Colvin one. I like the Marks one. And then, and the caller earlier, I like the being able to maneuver your way to get Allen Robinson in the second round when you already had Lee.
Yeah, I think for me, the best would probably, I would go to Marks, because the formula that Dave Cole wanted to use the first couple of years is sign that guy coming off the first contract, still got his best football ahead of him. Mine as many of those as you can, find a couple that are going to be long-term answers, and then he played at a Pro Bowl level this year. Mm-hmm. So for me, that would be, and the other thing that's impressed me, but it's not a single move, is just the seeming hit rate late in the draft in both of these first two drafts. I mean, potential impact players for a long time on this football team. As somebody pointed out, trading Blaine Gabbert to get the pick, which turned into Blanco, which at the time we were like, hey, Luke, you're going to be loved by everybody, regardless of if you're any good or not. And he turned out to be pretty good, you know, as a sixth round pick. Worst move, boy, I mean, Gerhardt, you know, just bringing him. I mean, based on the returns this year, I didn't think they were particularly good.
Yeah, and I think the Watson thing, and, you know, they'll say, well, it wasn't a lot of money, and it wasn't. But you guys, you talk about the competition stuff. When they signed him, they said, he's a starter. Well, he came here hurt, had two surgeries, and basically no big play. So I think that was a miscalculation. They should have just done something else there.
Yeah, certainly I think Dakota Watson is performed worse than Toby Gerhardt did. There's no question about it. He got cut, for goodness sakes. And then what was the thing you noticed him for in the Dallas-Detroit game? A penalty that extended Detroit's drive, and they go on to score on a 90-plus yard scoring drive. What about you, Tony? Best and worst for Dave Caldwell.
You got to love Marks and Miller, really, that middle of the defensive line. And we talked about it when they signed those contracts for both those guys. How long has it been since the Jags signed somebody in free agency and then felt comfortable giving them another contract because of the way they played? And I know they brought both those guys in on short-term deals to hope they would do that, but to get two guys that did that, and really the way that they've rebuilt this secondary, as bad as it was when Caldwell got here, he brings in, we've talked about Colvin, he brought in Alan Ball, who was a solid guy for them for a year and a half when he was healthy. They draft Jonathan Cyprien, and we'll see what he turns out to be. But to have guys that you feel really good about going forward in that secondary is impressive. The worst, obviously, look, if they had Daryl Smith, they'd still have one of the answers at linebacker right now, at least in the short term. And instead, it's been up in the air for this entire time. You can talk about Toby and Dakota and those guys as well, though.
Yeah, look, the Daryl Smith thing, I think, is probably the right answer. But I just feel like we've beat that down so bad for 2 years. You know what I mean? Like, sure. It's not like – it's almost an example of such a glaring mistake in hindsight that – it stands out, because I don't think Dave Caldwell's made me too many glaring mistakes. And with the Dakota Watson thing, I get your point that they brought him in and they miscalculated. But I still think he was more in line of, we're going to bring him in. We think he can start. He fits the profile. But it was still a low cost roll of the dice on him. So that one, for whatever reason, doesn't seem to bother me as much.
You know, the Daryl Smith one doesn't bother me, because he was limited to, I think, three games in 2012 with a groin surgery. And, you know, that one, you know, he hadn't been with this regime at any point. So you're going to move on from veterans. You know, I'm glad nobody said Knighton, because, you know, Pot Roast wanted to move on. He had done his race here. That was a mutual thing. But
but it felt like Daryl would have come back. Like, he was fine with staying in Jacksonville, and instead the team decided to let him go.
Well,
and they had months. Right,
he signed it like June or July.
Yeah, I mean, they had months to make that decision. And, look, we've talked about this before, too, but as good as they've been in the last half of these drafts for the last couple of years, the jury's still out on how good Jokel or Cyprien are going to turn out as picks. And they really need Luke Jokel to turn into at least a solid left tackle for this team. You don't want to have to go redo that position in a course of 2 or 3 years if you're
absolutely
the GM.
But I think it's just for me, not for a lot of fans, clearly, because we see the tweets and the emails and everything else. For me, it's too early to write off Luke Joeckel.
Yeah.
But and certainly the team's not writing him off, but you know, if you put a replacement level player in there right now, I don't think, you think if in hindsight, if they could go back, would they still do the Eugene Monroe deal the way things have worked out? I understand your point earlier. You said, don't forget those draft picks they used that helped them trade up, and what Robinson and Linder, both of those guys were those picks, I think, were used at.
Yeah, I think they would have done it.
Were those picks used directly in those trades, or were they?
I think, well, they traded up for both of those guys.
Right. So, they had the flexibility of having more picks.
Yeah, and I think one of those picks, and another one might have been the Mike Thomas deal. But what you hit the key word, it did give you flexibility. That, okay, they could trade one of those things because they know they still had another sixth or whatever.
Right, right. I want to say one of those picks turned into Aaron Colvin, if I'm not mistaken.
I think it did.
He was picked in the fourth.
Right, and they got, what did they get, a fourth and a fifth? I think
and
that fourth might have turned into Aaron Colvin.
And then one of the fifths, the other fifth may have been Mike Thomas trade, which they
They did get that, right.
Moved up to get Linder.
Possibly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't think they regret the Monroe deal because they weren't ready to pay him that money to play left tackle, and they weren't happy with what he was doing in the run game. So they were pretty committed to that, as shown by they waited less than half a year before moving on from him.
Hey, what are we going to see from you and the TU the next week or so?
Hopefully not much.
Good. A little downtime, a little time off, or what? Yeah, what's going on?
We'll start on Sunday. I'll have a Sunday Jaguars Insider each week during the off season.
Okay.
Which is basically just a hodgepodge of what's going on, and it worked well last year. And then as the coordinator stuff develops, news as warrants.
Yeah, and for that, if you missed Ryan's thoughts on the coordinator candidates that have been named publicly, just go into On Demand. You can go to Jaguars.com and listen back to the podcast. You can go to 1010XL.com. The On Demand section will have that for you as well. Final question, out of the three guys who've been named publicly, Trestman, who you don't think is a very serious candidate, Greg Roman, Kirby Wilson, odds in your mind right now that one of those three ends up being the offensive coordinator for the Jaguars?
100-1.
100-1, yeah. That it'll come from those three. So you think it's going to be likely a guy who's coaching on a staff whose team is still in the playoffs,
yeah, or they just haven't got around to talking to yet, who may be in limbo with a staff who, you know,
head coach fired on their staff. They don't know if they're going to be available, that kind of guy.
So that's, you know, I think the eventual guy is not named yet.
Gotcha. All right, there he is, Ryan O'Halloran. We named him. He is with the Florida Times Union. Follow him on Twitter simply at Ryan O'Halloran, and enjoy a little bit of downtime. And we'll look for your Jaguar Insider Journal coming up this weekend in the Florida Times Union. For Fat Tony, for Joe Fortunato, for Tyler Devitt, I'm Mike Dempsey, wrapping things up today from Everbank Field in the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios. Joe C. Hacker, T-Wig, coming up next, XL Primetime, right here on 1010XL 92.5 FM.